Hello, everybody. Beth Massa here, host of the Rock and Roll Porter podcast. And today I am sitting virtually with Megan Vasco, who is a program manager at a company called Abacus Bio, or is that Bio, Megan?
It's we're in the UK, so it's definitely bio.
Abacus Bio. Hey, thanks for joining me. It took us a while to get this going. Miss Megan.
Busy ladies.
Yes. So tell everyone why we are talking today.
Oh, to be honest, I asked myself that question. You're a person who I've met in Amsterdam through our amazing hairdresser, Chris. I was so lucky that he connected us because at the time we were both businesswomen, kind of, I guess trying to, forge a path in Amsterdam. My path has since changed, but you're carrying on, and like I said, I just feel lucky that you even want to talk to me. I mean, you're one of my favorite sort of business women to reference. I tell all my friends about you. I'm like, oh, my friend Beth, she has this business in Amsterdam. She's saving the world and it's amazing. So yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I don't think I'm saving the world, but my path has changed, and my path has had many angular changes and directions as well, just under the same company name, I guess. But yeah, I remember when I was telling Chris that I was starting this business, and he said, "Oh, you've got to talk to my friend Megan," and you were an entrepreneur at the time. We're going to get into that in a little bit, but first, we're going to step way back, or maybe not. But I want you to tell me, who are you and what do you come from?
Oh, big questions, Beth. So who am I? I kind of describe myself as an intentional ENFP. I'm very into personality types, so that's quite an easy way to figure me out is just Google what an ENFP is, because I have to say I fit the mold sort of 80% of the way. But yeah, I guess what that means is I'm a big ideas person. I'm someone who sees things from multiple perspectives. If someone asks me, oh, what do you think of this? I'll be like, oh, well, I think this, but I could also see it this way. So, and it's really genuine. It's not, I'm not trying to placate anyone. I can just see things from a lot of different angles. And yeah, I guess I have a little bit of a sense of adventure. I mean, once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur, even if you have a nice steady paycheck and you're working for someone else. But yeah, what do I come from? I think I'm really the product of, two parents and sort of a family unit where they inadvertently created this world traveler that has a little bit of a wanderlust, but also is just very, I don't know, quite confident in going after what they want. I think some of the lessons I've taken away from, my family and that is, first off, never tell yourself no, like let someone else tell you no. So if you don't ask, you don't get. Definitely learned that from my mom. And yeah, I think the other thing is really, I don't know, just be kind to people. It's like you don't know where people are coming from or what they're coming from. So assuming the best is always the best path to take in the first instance. And I think that's kind of my dad coming out in me.
Yeah, because we're both Midwestern girls. You're from Ohio. I'm originally from Michigan, the Michigan-Indiana border. Both found ourselves in Amsterdam. And when Chris, our hairdresser, put us together, Michael and I were just starting out Ozarka. We were sampling different reusable container types, and we threw together a food online ordering platform, basically a delivery platform. And the idea was to get some menu items in there. The customers would order, and they wouldn't know which container type they were getting, and then we would get their feedback. And I'm just going to go ahead and talk through the barking because it's almost over. I'm sure you can hear it. And to this day, I regret stopping that because we were so focused on the packaging piece of it. And I should step back and say that we needed some caterers to fill that packaging with food. And you had a business at the time. Again, we'll discuss it, but we put your menu on the website. And this little pilot we were doing that had the singular goal of determining which packaging people liked was actually working very well. And we didn't see it because all we wanted to do was get the feedback on the packaging. And it I'm kicking myself to this day to say, why didn't we keep going with this? People were very disappointed when we stopped. And I'm very happy to say that your menu was not only the most popular, but had the highest number of repeat orders. So
Thanks.
tell me what you were working on back then.
Oh my gosh, in a way it feels like a lifetime ago. But maybe just to give some more general context, I guess it's maybe good to point out that I've had a super non-linear career path. I started life as a dietitian because I love food and I've always been into food. I came to the UK after university, and ended up doing a master's here in public health. Then I very inadvertently ended up in banking for 6 years. So never ever saw myself in the finance industry, but it was one of those, like, this was 2008, 2009, the economy was a wreck. I was just temping at the time. I was in the UK, and then someone who I'd worked with at the university said, "Oh, I know of like an admin job. It's just 6 months, but it's at a bank." And I was like, "Oh, I don't want to work at a bank. It'll be full of bank people." And I went and interviewed for the job anyway and got the job. And then they told me what I'd be making. And it was more than £6 an hour I was making temping. So
Was it a
I ended
lot
up,
more, I assume?
it was significantly more. So, I mean, at that point, yeah, it was honestly beyond what I ever could have dreamed, like, as someone just out of their, sort of master's degree and, working in a sector that I didn't feel particularly qualified for. But what ended up happening was, A, I worked with great people. I had all my assumptions challenged about sort of the finance and the banking world, I suppose. And yeah, I was working in what's called a PMO office, project management office. So it was kind of the administration behind project management. And I'd always wanted to be a project manager. So that was really a chance for me to sort of cut my teeth in, quite a corporate environment, in the project management space. So that's what ultimately led me to Amsterdam, sort of a visa slash ability to follow a role there. So ended up in Amsterdam for did finance for a few years there. And then I don't know, I kind of had this idea in my head that I wanted to start a dumpling company. So love dumplings. Like you said, grew up in the Midwest, where I'm from is particularly is called the pierogi belt because lots of Polish immigrants, like growing up, I was eating kielbasa and pierogi, and my family's not even Polish, right? It's just something that's quite Midwestern, I suppose. So when I got to Amsterdam, I felt like there was a little bit something missing there. Like, I couldn't find dumplings that were made with the ingredients that I would have want them to be made with. I couldn't find dumplings that, were more locally produced. And I couldn't find dumplings that had, like, I don't know, a little bit of an international flair to them. Like, we're both American, right? And I think we know Americans are pretty good at stealing things from the rest of the world. And my favorite thing to do is mash like cultures and flavors together. So I'm like, well, any food that I love to eat, whether it's, sag paneer, whether it's a roast dinner, or whether it's buffalo chicken wings, how can I make those flavors fit in a dumpling? And so that's what I did. And that's where we met. So I was living my best dumpling life, doing, pop-up events, catering, eventually moved into retail and a lot of wholesale business, so selling to restaurants. And I did that for almost 5 years. And it was, it's a time of my life I will never forget. I got to do so many things. I never would have thought. But Yeah, I did. It did get to a point where, I kind of had to make the decision, okay, is this something I want to keep pursuing, despite knowing I wasn't quite meeting the financial goals I was going for? Or is it time to pack up? And through a series of life circumstances, I made that decision pretty clear. And that's what I did. And I packed up, closed up shop, and then took another detour in life where I ended up working for a tech startup in Amsterdam that was focused on blockchain for agri-food. And then that led me to where I'm at now, which is Abacus Bio. And what Abacus does is consulting for plant and animal genetics. So in a way, it's this really great full circle story in that, I started in food because I love food as a dietitian, and I was thinking of, how people are impacted by food, our health, our culture, everything else, politics behind food. And now I've come to this funny full circle place where I'm working with food before it becomes food. In the genetic space, it's really, you're able to have an impact on things like the environment and on things like the nutritional makeup of food before it even makes it to the mouths of people that are having their dinner. So that's where I'm at now. Sorry, that's a very long version, but yeah, it's been a wild ride.
It's not nearly long enough, so we're going to explore lots of the things that you've talked about. As what I my goal for this conversation is to get people who are listening to this who may not ever meet you in person to get to know you the way that I know you. And I'm just looking at your LinkedIn profile right now, and there's somebody here in the recommendations portion that says Megan is ballsy but respectful, structured and playful, thinking outside the box while keeping internal strategic vision. I think that that's really true. And that is the dichotomy of you because you have a little bit of a wild streak, I
I'm an
would think.
ENFP, man. I'm all the
You're all the things. You have the best dinner parties ever.
things.
But when you said, you got hired by a bank for a position you were not particularly qualified for. Well, clearly they thought so. So I'm wondering why you have that. What I'm really trying to avoid is mapping that statement to the trope of, well, women only apply for jobs if they think that they're 90% qualified, and men only will apply for a job if they think they're 2% qualified. But is there something in there with you, or do you mean something different by that? Were you just being a little bit cheeky?
Well, I think it was really just the fact that it was in the banking space. Like when I look at what the role was, I mean, I don't mean to toot my own horn here, but like I went into that role and I smashed it, and I was out of that role within a few months. It was like, okay, this girl's clearly capable of more than, a little bit of admin, So for me, it was really the sector. It was because I didn't have sector knowledge. And to be honest, that's kind of my whole career has almost been built around that. Like I'm not a specialist in anything. Like the only thing I'm a specialist in is getting shit done. And it turns out that's really valuable. So in banking, I'm not a banker, at the time. And the thing is, I was actually working, the project I was working on, it's all around sort of merging IT systems when you had, one bank buy out another. And I didn't know anything about IT, at the time, and now my knowledge is questionable at best. That whole being a non-sector or a non-domain knowledge person has become, I don't know, in a way, like a flag for me, because I think because of that, I'm able to go into situations and look at, why something is being done or how something is being done. And I'm not afraid to ask questions about it. And sometimes people that are maybe sector experts or, domain knowledge people, they don't want to ask the questions because they maybe have a fear of, looking like they don't know something. I'm never really afraid of that. It's like I know my lane and I know what I'm good at. I lean heavily on the expertise of the people who are domain experts, but it means that I see things in a slightly different way. So I ask a question, and sometimes the answer is, "Oh, Megan, that's, would never be possible because of X." But sometimes it's like, "Oh, I haven't really thought of it that way, but that's the way we could think of it." So I think in a way it's worked out to be a strength of mine, not being a domain expert. in anything except for getting shit done.
Which is such a valuable attribution. But, and I will say, you are one of the rare people that have both sides of that equation. You're capable of both sides of that equation. So you have the entrepreneur's mentality, but you also have the ability to execute. And it's very rare that I come across someone who can do both. I'm certainly not one of those people. I'm not one of those people that wants to dig in and ask those why questions, because I feel even thinking about it, I'm feeling this fear of I don't want to know the answer because it feels so confrontational.
Oh,
And
wow.
then once you have the information, you're accountable or responsible for doing something with it.
Yeah,
But
yeah, yeah.
you thrive in that situation.
Oh,
That's
I
very
do.
unusual.
I really do. And I mean, as I do it kind of just in my everyday life, but also, professionally. And you're right. I mean, sometimes I do run into that resistance, I mean, it's not always it's not always rainbows and unicorns when like having those conversations, but 'cause you're right. I mean, that's something I've realized. There are a lot more people that are conflict averse in this world than I guess I realize, because I guess that's another thing when I think of what I come from. It's not, I didn't have some really like tumultuous upbringing where there was like always fighting and arguing and stuff, but like nobody was shy to, if you know what I mean. Like nobody, there wasn't a lot of walking on eggshells, It was like you say what you need to say. Now I think, as I've gotten older, I probably pick my battles a little bit better. But yeah, it's something that I guess, yeah, I have taken forward. And it always surprises me when people don't want to have that conversation, because, and I think this is as a result, maybe professionally, but also just on a personal level. Like, I've done a lot of the work, as they call it, in sort of, the past, I don't know, past 5, 6, 7 years. And I think in that I got really comfortable with the truth, whether or not it was a truth that I wanted to hear, because I don't know, I feel like any other way, you're just kind of kidding yourself, or you might be delaying the inevitable. So whether it comes to, an interpersonal relationship, or whether it comes to if your business product actually fits the market, my favorite thing to do is kind of facilitate those conversations and really like dive into that. And sometimes it's answers you don't want to hear, but they can spin you in a direction that, you were never expecting, and it could be amazing. So I think it's a shame to let fear of the truth rob people of that opportunity.
When you say you got comfort, you are comfortable with the truth. Does that mean that the truth gives you comfort, or does it mean you just don't shy away from it, that you feel empowered by it?
I don't think the truth is always comfortable, but I guess in that aspect, like everything's temporary, right? So you might hear a truth that you don't like and it is uncomfortable, but I guess I know that that discomfort is not permanent. And I know future Megan will be thankful for the decisions that, present Megan made based on the truth rather than what I maybe wanted the truth to be, if that makes sense.
It sounds to me, given your upbringing, that you have the good fortune of not being burdened, as so many women do, with having to overcome being a people pleaser.
Yeah, that's probably true. And I think in some ways I don't think I've really been much of a people pleaser, but I have sometimes been an optimist to my detriment, So I think as hard as I come off, obviously I'm very, an aggressive woman, as some people might say. I was once described by my boss as equal parts charming and aggressive, and I'm like, that's actually does kind of describe me. But I feel like, yeah, the people pleasing's not been too much of an issue, but over optimism has. And that's where the hope side comes in. You know, I'm just kind of like, okay, like maybe this doesn't feel like it's working, but maybe we can like keep going. Maybe we can make it better. Maybe we can, you know, do this, do this, do this. And sometimes you need to just throw in the towel. And I
Cut your
think I've
losses.
gotten, yeah, exactly. And I think I've gotten better at that in recent years. But yeah, you're right. I agree. I don't really suffer with people pleasing like a lot of women do, you know, and I appreciate that that's a very, it's a very real thing for sure.
I know that Stephen Bartlett on his podcast has been reflecting on the theme of quitting isn't always a bad thing. It's not always failure. It's actually sometimes a smart,
Redirection and
Decision to make. And I think, I think that my sort of people pleaser tendencies are part of the reason for, like, I don't want to know. I don't want to know anything bad. Like, I don't want to have to confront you about something you're trying to sell me on, and maybe I don't want it. Or
that's funny
that's,
because I would never pick you as a people pleaser.
yeah, for sure. But this is why I want to have this conversation, because already twice now in our, we're barely into this, we've found two people who describe you with these opposite ends of a description spectrum.
I'm an enigma. I'm very mysterious.
I don't think that you're an enigma. I think
No,
that
I'm not.
you are multifaceted, though. And I'm going to
If
throw out
anything, I'm an oversharer.
another example of you introducing something to me that was really healing in my life, which was somatic therapy,
Ah, yes.
which is
I've been
very
thinking
soft and
about that lately.
squishy. Yeah. And I remember
Yeah.
you saying, I don't know how to describe this other than to describe it in woo-woo terms. But it's so amazing. And I'm like, well, I'm not much of a woo-woo person either, but I'm going to try it. And then after I went to my first couple of sessions, I knew exactly what you were talking about. I'm like, this
Yeah.
is incredibly therapeutic. I don't know how to describe it, but it's amazing. So I would actually, just thinking about that, it would be cool to have Amanda McRae on the
Oh,
podcast too.
yeah.
I'll see if she's available. But you wouldn't expect maybe that you would be open to something like this, but you were the person that introduced me to this. I'm always being introduced to these amazing things by other people. I'm never the one that seemingly be able to pass these things on to other people, but you did bring that into my life.
Oh, I'm so glad. And you know, I mean, I think you and I are the same on that sort of woo-woo spectrum, right? Like, you know, we're kind of down to earth, like Midwest girls. Like, you know, okay, like I read my horoscope, sure, but like I don't know what moon I was born in or anything like that. But like I had another friend of mine who, again, very like down to earth. She's actually someone I describe as one of my wisest friends because she just has such a, I don't know, a calmness about her, but also like a logic about her. When she was the one who actually told me, you know, about Amanda, and I'm like, okay, well, if she's recommending it, then I'll give it a try, you know, because it's yeah, if it came from her, then it's got to be good. And yeah, it is, and it was, and I'm glad that you've had the same experience.
Yeah, I did. And so if anybody has never gone to a somatic therapist before, with Amanda, at least what she did in my sessions, is she has you sit on the massage table with your feet out in front of you, with your knees pulled up, and she examines your feet and she makes this diagnosis about your sort of health condition. I mean, she won't like look at your big toe and say, oh, you have diabetes. It's nothing like that. But it's not too far off. And then she has you lie down and she just has you breathe and she's coaching you through breathing. And I'm breathing and then I'm crying and then I'm not crying anymore and I'm continuing to breathe. And then you go home and you have the best sleep of your night, of your life. I'm like, I just sat there and breathed for an hour. How do I feel so much better as a result of this? And then she sort of talks you through it about the mind-body connection and that the nervous system is responding to perpetual stress or whatever it is you might be dealing with. And That's real. That is real.
Yeah, there's so much we don't know about the body. And I guess what I kind of came back to, I mean, I do, I personally, I buy into it, right? Like, I think everything that we're doing there is really like helping the body and helping the mind. Whether or not it's like, I don't know, you can recreate it in like a double blind study, I'm not sure, but it helps me, and it just has had such an impact on me. And how I'm very bad at being in the moment, right? Like, I'm always thinking like, 10 steps ahead, and it really forces you to be in that place. And I think someone who is always looking 10 steps ahead, maybe there's a chance we're avoiding something. And this is where, it's your space to kind of work it out.
Highly recommend somatic therapy with a good practitioner. All right, so back to Pinch. I remember you with Pinch just working so hard. I remember you really doing everything on your own. Sometimes you'd have some help, some assistance, but it was really your show. And I wonder if after a time you that was one of the reasons why you decided to shut this down. I mean, you had alluded to the fact that there were multiple factors, so maybe we don't have to get into that so much. But going back to the theme of Megan being amazing at having this entrepreneurial spirit and the ability to execute, as a result, I think it was a result of deciding to close the or end the Pinch chapter, which, by the way, is the most adorable name for a dumpling company ever.
It was a good name. I was
You
so happy with that name.
came up with this, yeah, good. You came up with this idea of rebranding a closed or a retired or terminated small business or startup, not as a failure, but as somebody who is going to re-enter the corporate world with a huge amount of experience. And I really loved that because there's so many people who have started a startup and it has failed for whatever reason and feel some sort of tail between your legs, having to return to the corporate world as something to feel humiliated by, when in fact it's this absolute act of bravery that could be celebrated. And you materialized that idea. First of all, it was your idea, it was your concept into something that was worth talking about, doing something about. And I would love for you to go deeper into your thought process there.
Are you talking about the sort of app thing I explored?
I guess so, or maybe even not, yeah, I think so. Or just the idea or the concept in general. How did that come to you? Was it, waking up the middle of the night going, wait a minute, or talk me through it?
I don't think, I think with most things in, well, at least in my life, there's not a lot of light bulb moments. It's something that sort of gradually over time builds up, and then one day you're like, oh, all these pieces fit together and maybe I can do something with this thing. I know when I decided to close the business, it was a bit of shame associated with that. You're just like, oh God, like I worked on this for this long and I couldn't air quotes make it work. When making it work doesn't mean I wasn't selling plenty of dumplings. It doesn't mean that, people weren't happy with the product. It just meant that at least the way I was doing it, I couldn't come to a reconciliation with the finances I was, the financial status I was able to achieve with the business versus what I wanted for my life, to enable like a little bit like lower stress life, like not having to stress about money, being able to do things like travel, which I love. So that was sort of the reconciliation. And yeah, in that, like I said, I was ashamed that I couldn't make it work, as you say. But at the same time, the more I thought about it and sort of the more people I talked to about it, I hadn't really appreciated the experience that I had actually gained over that time. It's like in my mind, I was like, okay, I'm just like making up recipes and selling dumplings. And that's what I've been doing for the past, 5 years. But in actuality, I was building marketing campaigns. I was managing clients. I was dealing with, logistics. I was managing people, my team that helped me in the kitchen. Like it was so much more that I did than I actually realized until after the fact. And I went back to it and I'm like, actually, now you talked earlier about, like applying for jobs, unless not applying or not applying for jobs based on your perception of how many of the criteria you actually meet. I felt like this experience actually meant that I met a lot more of the criteria for different roles that, were quite diverse in their skill sets. And for me, like I'm a person that gets bored very easily. Like I need a job or I need a role that's really diverse in what I'm actually able to do. And yeah, the experience of being an entrepreneur where, you are literally responsible for everything, especially with the size my business was, it was, quite a small business. Yeah, it just kind of, it gave me that. And yeah, I mean, even things like dealing with the media, like it's just incredible the amount of stuff that I did when I reflect back on it. 'Cause I don't think about it all the time, but when I do think back on it, it's really wild what what I actually did. Creating packaging, like doing food photography, like staging food stuff. Like I did all these things because as an entrepreneur with not a whole lot of money behind you, and it all being your own money, by the way, like you have to do it yourself because yeah, you need to bootstrap. So I think in the roles that I've taken since then, that was actually part of the appeal. It was like, okay, like for example, my first job out of Pinch World was, like I said, at this tech startup, and they needed someone who could bootstrap. They needed someone who knew how to get things done on a budget, and they needed someone who was happy to wear a lot of hats. And that was just like a very natural progression from, going from being an entrepreneur to, okay, I was working for someone else, but I was still getting to exercise those muscles. So.
These are concepts that are so important for women to hear, to re-examine and shift the paradigm of what they think their skill set is. And I'm curious with you, Megan, when you, you're going to correct, say this better than I'm about to say it, but when you decided the business isn't working, even though by certain definitions it was that partially, and I heard this word, this phrase, I get bored easily, you reaching actually a certain level of success and thinking to yourself, oh, this is now I've achieved some sameness, some day in, day outness, and I'm losing my passion for this. Did you have an idea in your mind of after 5 years, this is where I want the company to be, and it wasn't there? In which case, that quote unquote failure is only in your mind and not perceptible to anyone else. Like, I
Yeah,
want to
it's a
go deeper into that moment.
that's a good question. For me, so it took about, I mean, I'd been hemming and hawing on, if I was going to close the business or not for probably at least a year before I actually did, right? And it was for a number of reasons, and I highlighted the finance side, but there was other stuff, and when thinking about why, like some of the big drivers behind actually closing it, I don't think it was necessarily that I got bored, but what happened was, at kind of as a result of the finances, I couldn't do with the business what I wanted to, which was I wanted Pinch to be a self-sustaining social enterprise, bringing work opportunities to people who might be struggling to find them. I really wanted Pinch to be something that, was a business. I want to be really clear. I'm okay with making money, and especially women making money. It was, meant to be a profitable business, but I wanted it to be a conscious business, and I wanted it to be a business that was able to really tangibly give back to the community that it was in. And the sad part is, to do that, it's quite hard unless you're making enough money. You need money to support these kinds of initiatives. You need money to be able to ensure that, if you're bringing someone on who has a distance to the labor market, you need to make sure there is another person there to adequately support them. And the idea of paying basically two people to do the job of one or one and a half people, the finances just didn't really add up. So I think what it came down to was, there was a certain amount of impact I just wasn't able to have because of some of the financial restraints. And then the other thing I would say is, one of my favorite things in the world to do is host events. Like, I love hosting events, whether that's a workshop, whether that's a dinner, whether that's a dumpling and wine pairing, which were some of my most favorite things to do. That aspect of it, I still got to do it to a certain point, but as the business owner, my job became chasing the money. It was like, okay, find more clients, find more people to buy these dumplings, find more outlets for these dumplings. And while I accept that's a completely, it's a completely legitimate role for the founder to play, that was very boring to me. I didn't want to really chase the money. I wanted to do the creative stuff, and that's the thing that I think, a lot of entrepreneurs make that mistake in the sense they think, okay, I started this thing because I'm really passionate about, dumplings and recipes and cultural fusion and bringing people together. Like my whole sort of, I don't know, it'd be a big statement, but my purpose in life is really to connect people, and food is a really great vehicle for that. And I just found I wasn't able to do that because my role had evolved to chasing the money, and that I did find very boring. So yeah, that definitely played into the decision, because it was just like, okay, it can't be all, it can't be fun all the time. It's work. You do, when you turn your passion into a job, there's a little bit of a myth that, oh, you never have to work a day in your life. No, you definitely do. But some days are easier than others. But yeah,
Megan,
that.
oh my God, so true. I love that. Like, yeah, find the thing that you love and you'll never work another day in your life. That is a bullshit.
Bullshit.
And unless you get the funding or a co-founder who loves to do the things that you find boring, it's tough because we don't love everything and we're not good at everything. That said, I also wonder if, and this happens all the time, it certainly happened in my business, in certain aspects of my business, you can be too early. Because I just this week had a conversation with this new social entrepreneurship program that has the funding where if Pinch existed today, we could plug it right in and it would be everything that you needed financially for you to be able to stay in the lane you wanted to stay in. And also, I'm feeling like this is a very risky conversation to have publicly for Abacus Bio because I'm already thinking of five different ways that I want to poach you, but I promise I won't. I promise I won't. But who?
The thing is, I really like my job at Abacus Bio. It's a place where, they really not only allow but promote like intrapreneurial initiatives. And that was one of the things that attracted me to it. I get a steady paycheck, and I also get to, pitch ideas for, products or processes or, clients I want to pursue. I get to do all that here with the security of a paycheck. And, that's something I really appreciate about Abacus. I will say, you can close the business. I don't know what the equivalent is of, you can take the girl out of Ohio, but you can't take Ohio out of the girl when thinking about entrepreneurship. Like, you can take the girl out of the business, but you can't take the entrepreneurial spirit out of the person. And that's kind of how I feel. I mean, I've found ways to exercise I don't know, my entrepreneurial spirit without kind of the money aspect. It's not something that I don't think I'll never, it's double negative. I don't think it's something that I will not ever do. I can definitely see myself side hustling. Something I don't get to do a whole lot of is, well, I get to do it a bit, but something I would like to do more of, and this is something I'm thinking about kind of side hustling, is really that facilitator space, where it's like I go and I meet with, a company for half a day or, a few hours or something, and just kind of go, okay, what are the problems you're facing? Like, where are you stuck? And I love, this is where it gets down to like getting into the truth and going, okay, the only way you can get unstuck is by understanding what the truth actually is, and then kind of creating some actionable steps to move to move forward, you know, based on like an understood truth. So that's something I'm definitely looking at for the future. And then in the meantime, it's something that is not at all monetized. But if it were, you know, it would be sort of my next pinch, but nothing to do with food. It's my no kidding group. Have I told you about the no kidding group?
You have not. Tell me about the No Kidding Group.
Okay, so I do not have children, much like yourself, and unless you count the pets, because that's different.
I don't count the pets. I do not have children. I have
Okay,
pets.
fair enough, fair enough. But yeah, when I moved back to Edinburgh, so I was in Amsterdam for 10 years, and then after closing the business, and then after COVID, I decided to make my way back to Edinburgh, where I lived before, because yeah, I just love Edinburgh. It's somewhere I've always felt really at home. So made my way back here through getting this role with Abacus Bio. And I knew I was very lucky coming back that I had a core group of friends here that, you know, I've had for, you know, 15 years at least, from when I lived here the first time. But obviously in 10 years, quite a lot of things change. People get married, they move out of Edinburgh, they have kids. So I knew coming back, it was not going to be the same. So after about a year of kind of getting settled back in, I realized like, okay, I really need to expand my social circle to meet more people that are in the same phase of life that I am, which is, you know, sort of 30s, 40s, child-free, ability to be spontaneous, you know, to just go, hey, you want to go to a pub on a Thursday night, which is not always possible with friends that are parents, you know. And I want to be clear, I love my friends that are parents, and I even like some of their kids, but they just don't have that spontaneity, you know, that possibility to be spontaneous. So I started No Kidding, which was just a Facebook page I set up. I posted on another group in Edinburgh just saying, hey, moved back to Edinburgh recently, looking to meet people. Here's sort of my stats. And in the nicest way possible, I just made it clear that, you know, my quota for friends with kids was sort of met. And I was looking to really specifically meet people that didn't have children so that we could keep that spontaneous vibe going. And the response on this page was incredible. I mean, and there were so many people that were like, oh my God, I would join that. I would join that. I would join that. So I messaged the organizers of that page and I said, hey, I'm not trying to siphon members or anything, but would you care if I set up a page a little more specific to this? And they said, yeah, go for it. Like, we'll probably join it, you know? And yeah, that's what happened. And I set up No Kidding, Child Free in Edinburgh, thinking I would get, I don't know, maybe 150 people or something like that, just to, you know, arrange spontaneous coffee dates, pub dates, go to the movies, you know, go on walks, go on hikes, whatever. And we're now at about 1,000 people. And it's been so incredible. You know, I've gone to Christmas parties where, you know, that's the Christmas party of one of the members. And I look around and I'm like, literally every person is here because of No Kidding. And that to me is just, you know, that's just the icing on the cake. It's like, it was, I don't want to make it sound too altruistic. It was a very selfish initiative. I'm like, I want more friends that can go do cool things with me, you know? But it's worked out to just be this network where it's connected me with so many incredible women and so many incredible women that have, you know, really diverse interests, really diverse careers. It's just, I don't know, it's just this epic pool of women. And I feel so lucky to, yeah, even be a part of it.
This was the Facebook group. I didn't know you had given it a name. Again, no kidding
Oh
group.
yeah.
Very cute. That I really wanted to get into. I don't think this is really exceptional. And for anybody that's ever tried to build an online community, 1,000 people is actually a lot of people, especially when it's in a geographic area as small as Edinburgh. So
Yeah, that's true.
there's a few themes that I want to explore around this story, but one of them, and I do want to go back to the idea of being, you know, intrapreneurial versus intrapreneurial. I tried to be intrapreneurial in my last corporate job, which only got me so far. So I said, I'm going to, you know, bounce out of this and start my own company. You are probably somebody who just has the right balance of skill set where the intrapreneurial approach might be, you might be more successful at that. But one of the things that I'm exploring this year in my life, and I call it the theme, I call it the light touch, is how can I explore interests in my life outside of the startup? And I think as a founder, you feel kind of guilty if not every single second of your life is devoted to the startup, especially when you have investors. And I feel that way very much, but I don't want to be so one-dimensional. I do have other interests, and if I don't satisfy those other interests, they're going to become distractions. So I've been thinking this year of ways of just maximizing the technology that's available to all of us to be able to do everything, like this podcast, like focusing on my health and well-being, like doing, just the simple little gardening projects that I don't really have time for, but are in the, not even the back of my mind, somewhere in the middle of my mind all the time. Plus running the startup. And so one thing that I do is I really, really try to keep my scheduled meetings to an absolute minimum. So anybody that tries to set up a meeting with me, I'm like, you know what? Just call me whenever you have a chance. I'll probably be available. You know why? Because I don't have any meetings in my schedule. I always have my earbuds in my ear. And that way, if I need to have a work meeting, I might be able to have that work meeting while I'm, planting my new tomato seeds for the year. I'm really trying to do this, or I'm experimenting more with dictation. So if I have to take a lot of notes, I'm trying to talk at my laptop or at my phone to get those notes in. Because if you're talking, you don't have to.
Interesting.
Yeah, you don't have to be in front of your laptop. So if I, so I'm, I'm doing that, with like maybe some business books that I'm reading on my Kindle. I'll highlight the things I want to highlight, and then I keep everything in my OneNote. I'll dictate those highlights to my OneNote, or I can probably export them if I was smart enough. But just trying to see, like, how can I just get this work done that I need to get done, and be mobile at the same time, which means not sitting at a desk behind my laptop. So, and in doing so, I am able to do the podcast. I am able to work maybe like 5 or 10% of my time on this project of building this showcase sustainable house, blah, blah thing in the south of Portugal, and run my business, and I'm not great at it yet, but it's like, wait a minute, let's figure out how to rebrand multitasking, which I think we've all decided in the conventional way that we've thought about that isn't working. But one of the things, that you said is like, oh, it's sort of this, it's not pinch, but it's sort of this new thing. And I was just thinking with a facilitation project, I really love to be doing something with my hands that's simple and repetitive as I'm thinking about complex things. I think it helps me. And by no means would this be some sort of cooking class, but I would love to hire Megan as a facilitator who's trying to get my company unstuck while we're all at a table making pinch dumplings, and we get to take them home or we get to eat them when we've
Oh my
celebrated our
gosh.
big breakthrough,
Beth, why didn't we have this conversation 5 years ago? I could have made the roll. I could have had people pay me to roll my dumplings.
It would have
It
been
would have been
too
amazing.
early. I'm trying to figure out a way to get other people to pay for this house that I want to build in a way that's also profitable for them. But these are new ways that we can have everything that we want that's interesting in our life in a way that all of these things benefit each other rather than taking away from each other.
That's like everything you said there is really interesting because I guess where my mind went immediately was when you said like you'll kind of you just have your earbuds in and you can kind of have a meeting whenever. For me, like I would struggle with that because I'm like, okay, I sort of time box my space and say, okay, like these are my times for meetings. And like sometimes you have to be flexible, of course. But if I knew that there was always like potentially a meeting around the corner, I think I would freak out. Like I don't think I could handle that.
And that's the beauty of technology, because I get anxious because I have such horrible time management of having to constantly be obsessed with, okay, you have your podcast at 2 o'clock with Megan, 2 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 2 o'clock. It doesn't give me anxiety to schedule a podcast with you, but if it was like any other sort of meeting, I'm so nervous of being hyper focused, which is something that I do, and then looking up and realizing I'm already 10 minutes late for this meeting because I've completely blocked out all the bells and whistles and buzzers and notifications. And also, I think that when you have a time slot schedule, people feel obligated to use up all the time. I'm like, most meetings you can get done in like a 5 to 10 minute conversation. You know,
True.
I'm not sure yet, but this is what I'm
Well, it's good to
exploring.
experiment. And see, see how it works for you. I mean, that's kind of that, fail fast mentality, right? So like try it out. This is the whole startup thing, right? So, do the minimum viable product, do the minimum viable process, see if it works. If it falls down immediately, then okay, maybe this isn't worth sort of going deeper in. But then you're like, actually, this is kind of okay. What if we tweak this? What if we tweak that? Iterate again, and you'll find something that works eventually. I mean, I think
Yeah,
that's
and
the theory.
when things do fail, they do indeed fail fast. So they
Right,
fail
right.
fast all by themselves. You don't have to
Yeah.
try that. But anyway, back to the No Kidding group. So this is a Facebook group of 1,000 people that you started. So you have clearly tapped into something that is very much needed.
Definitely.
So how, tell me more about how this works. I know that you it's invitation only, or it's not invitation, but it's not
It's
open. It's a
yeah,
closed
so
group.
yeah, so it's a private group. There's been no advertising of it. So the only way people find out about it is, there is like Facebook does their automatic, algorithm stuff. If they see you're a woman of a certain age in Edinburgh, with interests that kind of align with the group, then yeah, you might get showed this, but there's no paid advertising or anything. And other people promote it in other groups. So there's all kinds of groups around Edinburgh. There's one called Egg, which has, oh my gosh, probably like 30,000 women. And in that group, you'll find women will post on there saying, oh, I'm new to Edinburgh, I don't know anybody. Sometimes people are really specific that they are also looking for friends that maybe have the flexibility that child-free people have. And other members of my group, they see it and they're like, oh, I'm in this group, like check this out. So that's another way people find out about it. It's really like a word of mouth situation. And people tell their friends, and yeah, that's kind of how it's grown to what it is. It is very geographically specific. So when you go to join the page, there's a few members' questions. One is, are you located in Edinburgh? It's not because I don't want people from Glasgow, but the point of this group is not to be an online forum. It is really for people to connect in person. That's another sort of, let's say post maybe a hangover from COVID, is that, we've done a lot of the online stuff, and that's fine, and it definitely has its place. And we post silly memes on there, and that's how we all connect. But the goal for me is always to get people off of the laptop. We spend, I mean, most of us anyway, in our jobs, recording podcasts, watching Netflix. We spend so much time on our laptop anyway. It's good to sort of move out of that. So yeah, one of the questions is about the geography. One is that you've read the rules of the group, sort of the description of the group, to make sure it is the group for you. I do make it really clear in the description that this is a group for people that are happily child-free. So I say this in a compassionate way, but it's not a support group for people who are struggling to conceive and are looking for other people that are in that boat. These are people, it could be that somebody came to the group from that space and they've gone, okay, I'm going to have, a child-free life going forward. So I want to find other people that, are also living that way. But yeah, I want to make it really clear, sort of the right audience for the group is, you have to read the description to make sure you do that. And I think the other question is, you don't have kids. So it's pretty straightforward. Yeah, that's kind of, yeah, how you find the group, and yeah, what people find. And then, I mean, the stuff people do from that is, it's so diverse. I mean, you have your standard, coffees, drinks, like going on walks. I started a walking women's Wednesday. So just like 6:45 in the evening, just, it stays light really for a really long time here in Edinburgh this time of year, to make up for the, pitch black at 3 p.m. in the winter. So it's just to like get out and like go do a walk for an hour or something with people that, maybe you wouldn't have come across in your everyday life. But we have people who, are super into true crime podcasts, and they were going to see someone live doing a true crime podcast, and they set that up. People go to concerts. People have taken like day trips to, Aberdeen. People, we have a book club, so we've got a really great book club going on right now. So it's all kinds of things, and I think the best part about the group. So in the beginning, again, I love organizing events. First event we ever had was just like a picnic in the park on like a Saturday afternoon. Bring your own food, bring your own drink, and like we'll just hang out. And it was lovely. It was so nice. And in the beginning, I was doing a lot of the organizing of events, but I've made it really clear, and I have to constantly remind people, like, this is a self-perpetuating group. You set up an event, if there's something you want to do, if there's something, that, you're just looking for a buddy to go to a film or go to a concert, like, you can post that, you can set up your own events. Just last night, we so outside of No Kidding, I have a pub quiz team, and we had won the pub quiz 2 weeks ago, so we had a little voucher to use. So we went to the same pub quiz last night, and also No Kidding, like a member in No Kidding had set up a pub quiz team. So it was really funny because I'm like, oh look, I'm with my OG pub quiz team, but we're gonna battle this to the death, and we ended up winning, and No Kidding got second place. So it was yeah, it was just hilarious, but it's all kinds of things, really anything you can think of. We do.
So how long has this been going on, Megan?
So I started the page in, I think it was July 2022. Our first event was in August 2022. So almost coming up on 2 years.
And is this one of these things where you're just gonna let it go with the flow? Do you have a strategic vision for it? Do you worry if the interest in it or the involvement in it starts to fade, or how are you thinking about maintain the maintenance of this organization?
It's a good question. I definitely had times when I'm like, okay, this clearly, like you said earlier, has struck a chord. Should I try to turn this into something that is, that, I could retire on? Not really. But should I try to turn this into like a venture? Should I try to constantly grow membership and stuff like that? And to date, I mean, like I said, I played with it, but to date, I've kind of settled on I want to keep it as it is. Like it's very tempting, but I guess, my experience with Pinch, and not that it was a bad one, but it's that, turning something you just really love like into a business isn't always the right thing to do. I think part of it too is, I know people really benefit from it. It's a little bit in a way, if people stop coming to events or if they slow down like coming to events, it's kind of a good thing because in my mind that means actually maybe they, maybe an overused phrase, but maybe they found their tribe within the group, and they're not looking for those events to sort of prop up, social opportunities and stuff like that. So yeah, I think for now I'm kind of happy where it is. It's not something I would never consider, but at the same time, I think the other thing is too, once you start asking for money for things, people have higher expectations. So it's like earlier this year, I had a lot of travel, right? I was all over the place for work and whatnot, and I wasn't able to really organize much or do much. And when it's a free thing, nobody can be bothered by that, right? Nobody can be like, oh, you didn't do the monthly event and I pay, I don't know, a membership fee or something like that. So this way, it just kind of keeps it so that it is really, it's really driven by the people in the group, and I'm one of those people. I mean, honestly, just having, access to all these amazing women by way of having this group, that's sort of good enough for me for right now. The only thing I have thought about, which is funny because we're on a podcast, is starting a No Kidding podcast because earlier in the group's inception, I had this like crazy idea that I would have, coffee, basically like office hours on Fridays, and I could have a coffee with everybody in the group. Well, now that we're at like 1,000 people, that's a lot of coffee, and I'm trying to cut down my caffeine anyway. So I thought that might be might be a little ambitious. So the podcast is a way, as you well know, that I could reach more people, have some interesting conversations, with members about issues that do impact child-free women. So everything from, the silly things like, I don't know, the annoying things your friends that are parents do, to things that are a little more serious, like, estate planning when you don't have kids. I mean, these are things that are really relevant, and yeah, we don't probably give enough attention to, or there's not enough attention given to them in like mainstream media and that sort of thing.
Okay, so I accidentally hit the off button on my headset and I was blathering on and on about how great it is that you have this community where you can leave it exactly the way it is, because I was saying that I have this rather obnoxious impulse when somebody achieves some unexpected success, like, how do we monetize this? When you can have things in your life that are just what they are. They're perfect exactly the way they are, and they bring you happiness. And that is a theme that you don't achieve with the constant pursuit of bigger, more, faster, cheaper, faster, cheaper, or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of
You
that in
have
this
this,
world.
yeah, there's too much of that in this world to just have something like this and say, this is just amazing exactly the way that it is. We need to again work that that muscle in our lives as well, or at least I do. So I'm very inspired by you this regard. Okay. So all right. So my friend Megan Vasco, who I've known for how long have I known you?
Oh
Like
God.
16 years, I
I
think.
was I, yeah, I was gonna say, I'm like at least 10 years,
Yeah, it's been way
probably
longer.
longer.
Longer than that.
Yeah.
So we met through our hairdresser. Megan went abroad after college, got this weird job at a bank where she was amazing for 6 years, started a dumpling company, and started this Facebook group of 1,000 amazing women. Oh, yeah. And that's another thing that I wanted to say too about, having come from 20 years of a deeply male-dominated industry, I've worked with many wonderful men who were my colleagues and my friends, and I'm married to one, like, big fan. But when I also found my tribe or my community of incredible women that I personally felt an intellectual and emotional kinship with, I'd never had that before professionally. And once I found them, which was only a few years ago, I'm sort of grieving for all of those years where I missed out on these relationships. And I don't know if that was your experience in your corporate life, but I'm so glad that you have that now. Because I think that this is these types of communities and kinships are the way that we women are going to build our own culture in our own way, on our own time,
Totally
and in our
agree.
own terms. And within the subcultures, for example, of childless women, so much to be explored there, that are unique, the issues in life that are unique to childless women. I do hope you start that podcast. But when you're ready, when you've
It's
got the
on the
time.
it's definitely on the to-do list. Just to tap into the what you're talking about, sort of finding that like kinship with women. I feel like, it would be remiss of me not to say, like, when I was in Amsterdam, that was really my like first introduction to that, and it was meeting so many, other like women entrepreneurs, and just, I don't know, just the most incredible women. And you were 100% amongst that cohort. It was, yeah, it just sitting there and like vibing with people and jamming and thinking and sharing ideas, and like this really open, free flow of ideas and information, but also emotion. Like, I feel like that's something that sometimes, doesn't come as readily available if you're sort of not in the women's space. I remember, I can't remember what the event was, but you and I had gone to something. It was
I'm thinking of this event as well. I do
the
remember what it
KVK
was.
one. It was
Yeah.
like near the KVK or at the KVK. And I think, you'd come in and I think you said something like I cried like three times today. I was like, girl, I do that all the time. Like, and it was
So the
just.
way I remember that, because I've told this story many times to other people, I'd come in, I think, sort of stressed at this dumb event, and I was looking forward to at least knowing that you were going to be there. And you were like, "Hey, how are you?" And I'm like, "Oh, I've had kind of a shitty day." And you said, "Oh yeah, I've cried like 5 times today."
Okay, so
I just thought
maybe
that
I'm
was so
projecting my
funny.
crying onto
You were
you.
the one that was crying. Yeah.
Probably. I'm a
And
crier,
so
which
when I
I
have
say.
women, I have women that come to me and they're feeling stressed or confused or they can't do it. And I'll always say, "Oh God, don't worry about it. I've cried already like 5 times today, even if I haven't." And it always, it lightens the mood. Yeah, I mean, another example. I always start out my years with themes. And so another one of my themes for this year, in addition to light touch, is be somebody who can help rather than somebody who needs to be helped. And so I've been working on my swimming technique. Obviously I can swim, but I want to be a very good swimmer if we end up in a flood situation, or if I find myself in the ocean and I have to swim for a very long period of time. So actually working on my technical swimming techniques. Another thing is that I organized a women-only carpentry workshop over a
Oh, nice.
weekend. And it was five of us women. And first of all, it was so fun because we were all quite intimidated by these big power tools, but we were so free to talk about it. Like, it feels very different to hold this thing than it is to watch somebody else do it. And we all, approached our fear and we all did really well with the tools. And there were also instances where we were learning about like dowels and biscuits and dominoes and these little pieces of wood where you might drill out the shape of that little piece of wood so you can attach, the corners of a shelf together and then you can't see the attachment. And so we were learning about the difference between dowels and biscuits and dominoes. And when we were shown all of the different shapes of what's called a biscuit, which looks like a cookie, we were like, "Oh, that's cute." And you wouldn't have that reaction with men looking at biscuits,
I know. I'm like, this
I,
sounds like a games night. We got dominoes, we got biscuits, like
yeah,
we just
and
need a glass of wine.
we all recognized that. We were like, "Oh, men would never look at all these different biscuits and go, 'Oh, look how it squeal about how cute they were.'" But it's just a different, it's just a different and very pleasurable environment, as you said, vibing when the guys aren't around, and honestly, I feel like sometimes guys might need that too. And it was definitely necessary to give women access to men's only clubs for obvious reasons. But now that we've achieved that, I can imagine that the men might also feel that emotional exhale when the ladies aren't around, like, I don't know. I think we could kind of come back to giving ourselves permission to have those meetups that, where you can only talk about things that, men don't want to talk about, being middle-aged and having a hard time getting up when the ladies that are in the room. I think that's perfectly reasonable. Not that men share those sorts of things, although I guess they do now, but
Well, that's it. I mean, I feel like, and obviously, I mean, I can't speak for men, but it does feel that overall there's been a collective shift to make it more okay and more socially acceptable for men to have conversations that, 20 years ago were totally off the table, but I think there's still probably a long way to go to it's allowed to have the conversations, but it's maybe not it's still not comfortable to have the conversations, there's still sort of I mean, years and years and years of conditioning, saying that, oh, you shouldn't, talk about these things out loud and whatever. I feel it's changing a lot. I mean, I remember being on the bus one day. There was this, clearly this very like young couple behind me. And, it was a girl and a guy, and she was like, I'm feeling really anxious because I don't have my bag, and my bag's at your house, and we have to do this, and this. And I really need my bag, and I'm struggling to like know what to do. And he was just like, okay, like what do you need from me? Like, how can I like support you in this. And it was just like this kind of language was just, I just think that's something that would have been so foreign to, my generation 20 years ago. You know, these were like 20-year-olds that were just having this really mature, open, clearly communicative conversation in a time of stress. And it really gave me a lot of hope for the future, to be honest. I was like, oh my God, if this is like, this is what Gen Z is doing, like more power to you. You know, I think it's great. And yeah, I hope we can see more of that. And I hope, we can sort of learn cross-generationally from each other. You know, it doesn't have to be, yeah, sort of this, I don't know, rigid, these topics are okay and these topics aren't okay, and it's okay to communicate this way or it's okay to communicate that way. I just think, yeah, there's a lot of hope for the future, the more openly we can talk about stuff, and the more people can express their needs. And if that need is, hey, I want to have, a space where I feel comfortable talking about, I don't know, maybe a gender specific issue, I think there's a way to accommodate that without alienating people from spaces that were like traditionally separated. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
When my friend's Gen Z daughter was really small, I'm sure she was not older than 7, definitely younger than 7 years old. We were talking about her day. I was just hanging out with my friend, and her little daughter came up, and I said, "Hey, how was your day today? What happened?" And she told me something bad that happened to her. And she said, "Yeah, I was really embarrassed." I was like, wow, she's only this little girl and she knows the word
Yeah.
embarrassed and she knows how to express that emotion. And I remember being a little girl and any negative emotion, like feeling ashamed. I was ashamed that I felt ashamed, or I was ashamed that I felt embarrassed, or I was ashamed that I felt lonely or vulnerable, because that it made you, it brought to the surface that you were vulnerable or weak or scared or outcast or ostracized. And she would be able to say, "Yeah, I really felt excluded." I was like, wow, that is
Yeah.
so powerful. I think the flip side of that is when this generation uses their emotions as a way to position themselves as victims, which I see all the time. There was this huge segment on the news this morning about epigenetic trauma, which is a real thing. But I looked at Michael this morning and I said, this is like very much the Gen X attitude. I'm like, my dad screamed at me every single day since I was 2 years old. You know, your father wasn't great. Your mother died when you were a teenager. We accept our trauma, and we did what we had, like you said, we did what we had to do to deal with it, and we moved on, we overcame it. And I'm worried about Gen Z, that they feel like negative
They let it
emotions, no matter,
define them.
let that define them and let it absolve them from the responsibility of taking control of their own lives. I'm like, this is the hand that you were dealt. Again, because I have this entrepreneurial spirit, I'm like, look what you have to work with and work with it, because the rest of it isn't doing you any favors. But yes, I agree. The emotional intelligence that this generation has is remarkable. And I do hope, along with the conversation around gender fluidity and openness to different types of sexuality, that there's also space for traditional or cisgendered people to say, I need what I need too, which is I want to take a carpentry class with just women. And they're for very valid reasons. I do worry about young men who are being punished for the luck that their fathers had of their extreme privilege. At the same time, I get very annoyed when I look at, lists or articles that come out every week of the new startups that have been funded, and it's like two white guys, two white guys, two white guys in their early 30s, two white guys, two white guys. I'm like, ugh. But
Who probably can't get money as well, and
it's
like,
not their fault. It's the fault of the investors who are giving them the money. And it's also human nature that people feel comfortable in what they see in themselves. It's again a muscle that needs to be exercised. And I feel like, as a woman who's founded a startup in this moment, again, I could also sit here with my arms folded, feeling victimized that I experience bias when it comes to funding, which I definitely do. But instead of doing that, I have come to terms with it. So I say that I have come to this conclusion that this is not going to be solved on my behalf in time for me. But if I could fight through it, if I could scratch through it, do what I have to do within the framework of my own ethics to make my company hugely successful, then I can be part of the solution for the women
Yeah,
coming up
it's the
behind me.
groundwork, right?
That's right. And so that's my place in this continuum. And I hope that, I hope that other people are able to see that for themselves as well, as we're in this moment of transition in this generation. We'll see.
We'll see.
Megan,
Beth.
I would like to end this podcast with a new thing, a new way that I'm going to end every
Oh,
podcast. And
am I the first guinea pig?
you're the first guinea pig.
Woo, a lot of pressure.
Here we go. Megan, what does it feel like to be you?
Oh, again, Beth, you come with these quite big questions. I think what it feels like to be me is a little bit of being in a constant state of anticipation, whether that's hopeful anticipation or despairing anticipation, kind of depends on the day. I think, that kind of nods to I'm always thinking sort of 10 steps ahead. So to that, I make what I think are very good decisions. I'm always thinking about a decision that, future Megan will thank me for. And as a result of that, I live by most measures like a pretty peaceful life. You were talking about how, this year you're focusing on, different things, the light touch approach. For me, this year has been about, and it's, I don't know, I feel guilty saying it, but almost like easy living. I'm like, how can I live my most stress-free life? And honestly, as a result of the different decisions I've made along the way, I've achieved that to, sort of a certain level. But that said, some of these decisions I make, there's a delayed gratification aspect to it. And sometimes that gratification is like really delayed. And I try to trust the process. But sometimes when you don't have anything tangible to point to and say, oh, look, there's my, good decision paying off, it's easy to have a wobble on that. But so as a result, yeah, I guess I would say what it's like to be me is living in an ever-changing state of anticipation. Sometimes you're anticipating good things, sometimes you're anticipating the worst. And in any case, you don't really know exactly how it's going to turn out until it turns out. So that, I think, is what I would say it's like to be me.
Well, I anticipate that anyone listening to your story today is going to be inspired by you, Megan, and garnish some real benefit from your wisdom and experience. And I thank you so much for sharing it with me.
Thank you so much. And I would, encourage anyone who is interested in having a conversation, no matter what that is, just find me on LinkedIn, just Megan Vasko, VASKO. There's not too many of us. If you find one that's a dentist, that's not me. So
I will put you in the show notes.
awesome. Thank you so much, Beth. It's been a
Thanks.
blast, as always, chatting with you.
Thanks, my dear. Next time we chat, let's make sure it's in person.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye.